The following is a shiur on changing the past, creating the future. Tshuva in the thought of Rav Kook. The recording picks up about 5 minutes into the shiur.
Hasn't been recorded. The Rish Lakish says, tshuva is so great that zidonos, intentional sin, nases lo kishgagos, is considered like accidental sin. Meaning, I sinned intentionally. Not me, somebody else. Somebody sinned intentionally and then did tshuva. Hashem is going to consider it as though they only made a mistake. It was an accident. And he quotes the pasuk, tshuva Yisrael ad Hashem Elokecha. He gives you the pasuk from Hosea. The Gemara challenges it and gives another quote from Reish Lakish, where he says, Gedola tshuva shezidonos naseis lo kizachuyos. Tshuva is so great that if you sin intentionally, but then you do tshuva, it becomes like a zichus. Zichus, a merit, a mitzvah. My hate, my avera, can become a mitzvah. Less perplexing, no? How does an avera become a mitzvah? I don't care how good your tshuva was. How does an avera become a mitzvah? If tshuva is simply the delete key, then it can't turn an avera into a mitzvah, right? It erases my avera. It doesn't convert it into a mitzvah. But that's what Rish Lakish says. He even quotes a pasuk in the Gemara. It says, yeah, when it's tshuva me'ahava out of love, it will indeed turn an avera into a mitzvah. So I have two questions now. Question number one, I quoted Rav Kook as saying that tshuva is much more than just a corrective. It's the greatest portion of Torah and life. What does that mean? And number two, what is Reish Lakish telling me in the Gemara when he says that you do tshuva, an avera can actually turn into a mitzvah? Those are the two questions. So to address the first one first, and that'll lead to the second. As Rav Kook understands it, tshuva is about returning to perfection. A human being is created, as the pasuk in Iyov says, as chelek elokami ma'al, a portion from Hashem above. What that means is a really good question, and the topic of way more shiurim than we have time for tonight. There's much debate, because when you say a portion from Hashem, what exactly does that mean? Where is it coming from? What does that mean, from Hashem? But the core idea is that our neshama inside, our soul inside, comes from Hashem and is something that is pristine. It has no flaws. It has no defects in it. And that's how we start out. Then we are put into the material world, and when we're put into the material world, we necessarily need to descend. Not necessarily to sin, not necessarily to commit an avera, but there's a descent involved in taking material form and living in a material world. Take a look at source number four. I'm jumping source number three for now. We may come back to it. Rav Kook writes, the path of all existence is founded upon tshuva. Entities come into existence as a descent from the divine realm to worldly realms, a form of descent and of terrible death, to which no descent in this universe from level to level, from great talented acquisition to lesser talented acquisition, can compare. There is a descent involved in simply entering this world. This is engineered on the higher calculation of justice, meaning Hashem's justice, which gauged the justice of existence before anything was created. And Rav Kook is alluding to a debate that we find in the Medrash. It's in the Gemara. It's expanded in the Medrash. A debate between Hashem's attributes about whether to create human beings or not. Because we lie. Because we make mistakes. And Hashem says, that's okay. I've got the calculation. But this descent has the foundation for greater ascent stored within. Yerida Letzarech Aliyah. And he quotes a pasuk which should be familiar from Tehillim. We included in the davening on Shabbos morning. Before mountains were birthed, right? B'terem harim yuladu. Before mountains were birthed, and earth and foundation were formed, you have been God for all eternity. You laid man low and declared, return, sons of men. Pasuk sound familiar? We say it so fast in Sukkah de Zimra that people tend not to think so much about it. When I say people, I mean Torchiner. The pasuk says, "Hashev enosh ad daka, vatomer shuvu bnei adam." Hashem, you put man ad daka, daka, dalet chaf aleph. You know what the word in Hebrew for depression is? Dikaon, right, from that same root. Tashev enosh ad daka. You depress man, you lower man, and then you say, do tshuva. This is what we say to Hashem as part of his praise in Tehillim. What is the logic of the sentence? What's the concept? That Hashem puts us into this world knowing that this lowers us. That in order for a neshama to exist in a material world, it's going to be lowered. And he says, that's okay. But now, your job is shuvu, to return to that initial perfection. And that's Reb Kook's vision of tshuva. Tshuva, like the literal meaning of the word, right? Lashuv is to return. Tshuva is about returning, not I committed an avera and now I need to go back to what I was. I spoke during Chazaras Hashatz and now I need to correct that and go back to what I was. That's tshuva in small, right? That's mini tshuva. Tshuva at its largest form, and the tshuva that Reb Kook envisions, is returning to the pure state one had when one entered this world. Going back to the neshama tahara. That's what Reb Kook envisions. That sort of tshuva. And Reb Kook says, it's always there. The desire to do this is always present. If you take a look at source number 6, I'll come back to 5 in a second. He says, tshuva always resides in the heart. It is stored in the heart even during the sin itself. Even when a person is committing an avera, there is something within that person that says, this isn't me. It may be overwhelmed by a momentary desire to do something wrong. And the Gemara says, "Ein adam chote elam kei nichnas bo ruach shtus." A person sins because a spirit of foolishness enters him. He's overtaken by a spirit of foolishness. But inside, we are drawn like iron to a magnet to return to our original state, to return to that state of perfection. There are religions that teach that a person is born in sin, but from our perspective, we are born in perfection. And life is an attempt to get back to that point. Slight digression into the thought of Rav Soloveitchik. You know, when Adam and Chava are kicked out of Gan Eden, after they're evicted, Hashem set something up at the entrance. What does Hashem set up at the entrance to the garden? Sorry? Angels, kruvim, right? And what are they holding? Sword. We have to turn to the Rebbetzin to answer the question. The angels are holding swords, good. What is the job of the angels? Besides looking cool with flashing swords, what is their job? To make sure no one comes in. Is that right? It sounds reasonable, right? You appoint angels with swords to do that sort of job. The pasuk actually says, "Lishmor es derech eitz hachayim," to guard the path to the tree of life. Are you sure it means to keep people out? Maybe it's the opposite. Says of Soloveitchik, maybe it's actually to keep the path open. Lishmor es derech eitz hachayim, based on the ideas of the Ramban, could be that Hashem is actually appointing them to make sure the path is always open for this tshuva, for this return. If you take a look back at source number 5 now, which I had jumped, thoughts of tshuva reveal the depth of one's desire, and the strength of the soul is revealed in all its glory through those thoughts. The greater the thoughts of tshuva, the greater its liberation. The key word for me in that line, it actually appears twice, is the word reveal. Thoughts of tshuva reveal what's already there. In other words, tshuva is not about changing who I am at all. Tshuva is about revealing what I already was inside. It's not about, Torchina was a bad guy yesterday, and now he's going to do tshuva to convince himself to become a good guy. I was a good guy before. And I was a good guy all along, even at the moment when I sinned. And it's only a matter of uncovering that goodness. That's what I need to be able to do in my tshuva process. A person commits an avera, and here we move towards an understanding of source number two. A person commits an avera, it's a horrible thing. The person has gone against that purpose for which he was created. But that avera, that sin, can also spur a person to return. Take a look at source number seven. Natural regret, which burns in the heart, is part of tshuva. From the soul's pain at its stagnation rather than ascent, and all the more so if it feels descent within itself. The neshama is in pain if it's not growing. If the neshama feels unfulfilled, if the neshama feels like it's not achieving, it says there's something wrong. It's unsatisfied. There's a remarkable work by Rabbi Dr. Avram Twersky, who's done so much work in the field of addictions in particular, on why kids go off into drugs. He has a remarkable point. I assume they had this in Canada like they did in the U.S., the Just Say No campaign. Right? It's not just those who are in the U.S. who are shaking their heads yes. Are you familiar with it? I don't know. In the U.S. it was very big. The Just Say No campaign. Advertisements everywhere, posters on the subways and trains, the whole bit. Just Say No. And they did studies and they found that the campaign didn't work. It was a bust. Why? Because the kids' response to Just Say No was, well, what else is there? You tell me I shouldn't take the drugs. I'm not satisfied with the way things are right now. And Dr. Twersky has a whole, Mahala, he has a whole philosophy built on why they're not satisfied with what they have and why they pursue indulgence. But the point is, it's not enough to simply say, just say no. You have to provide the cure. You have to provide some alternative that's going to satisfy what they're looking for. The neshama is not satisfied when a person stagnates, and certainly when a person descends. And when a person commits an avera, that causes a degree of grief. Take a look at source number eight. All sins cause the heart to grieve, for they demolish the unity of the individual person and the universe. Every ethical severing from that whole, whether from thoughts or deeds, individual traits or general balance, causes many small cuts which instigate great internal pain for all aspects of the soul. This feeds into a Kabbalistic idea that Rav Kook develops in greater depth here and elsewhere, the idea of the universe and a person's literally oneness with the universe. It's beyond what we're going to get into tonight, but that's his reference here to the unity of the individual person and the universe. He says, a person feels pain, a person feels grief at an avera. However, that also means that the avera can be part of the process of tshuva. Take a look at source number nine, please. He says, as part of the tshuva process, one must define well the nature of good and bad, meaning within one's actions, so that the regret and the stirring of his spirit from compulsion to sin toward resistance will affect only the bad and not the good. You don't want to end up resisting good. For example, you have somebody who thinks he's doing the right thing. And so he goes up to somebody who he knows has done something wrong, and he says, I'm going to correct him. I'm going to provide tochacha. It's a mitzvah in the Torah. And he botches the job and creates a fight, which leads to lashon hara, dot, dot, dot. So he comes back and he says, I got to do tshuva for all this. Clearly, I was wrong for giving mussar. I was wrong for engaging in tochacha. That wasn't what was wrong. What was wrong was the way he went about it. So Rav Kook's first point there is, don't regret the good things. You have to regret the mistakes, not the good parts. But that's not our key point here. We continue. He says, further, one must filter out the good that is found in the depths of bad and strengthen the good via that energy with which he flees from the bad, so that tshuva will function for the good, actually converting intentional sins into merits. And here he invokes for the first time what we saw in source number two. What Rav Kook is saying in that last line is a little bit opaque. Even trying to do the translation into English really didn't render it any more readable than the Hebrew. But what he's getting at here is that the Avera itself motivates the tshuva. And that is the key, perhaps, to understanding Reish Lakish. When Reish Lakish says that when I do tshuva, I turn my chet into a mitzvah, it's because the chet and the pain and grief that come with it are what motivate me to tshuva. That's what gives me the grief that says, time to go back to what's underneath. Time to go back to the good layer inside. Which brings us now to address the line of Reish Lakish from source number 2 more directly. Averos become like mitzvos. Zidonos become like zichuyos. Because by changing the future and revealing the perfection that was there all along, I also changed the past. The sin is the perfection, is a product of the perfection, I should say, that I always had. Anyone here into quantum physics? No? All right. Nonetheless, we'll try this. It was discovered quite a ways ago, it's at least a century now, that light waves are not really light waves. When light travels, it travels both as a wave and as a particle. What does that mean? Particle? A dot. Going from point to point to point, like you imagine light moving, dot, 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 dot. It's moving all along. That's one way to look at it. The other way is that it's a wave, meaning that a point here, an area in space vibrates, and then the next one vibrates, like the way sound travels. When sound travels, it's not an object traveling. Right? The air here is vibrating, and that sets the air here vibrating, and so on, until it reaches your ear. That's the difference between it being a particle, there's actually an object that is light, there's a point, and a wave, that there's an whole area that's vibrating. Why does this matter? Because it turns out that through measurements that are way too obscure for me to be able to explain in any length of time, no matter how long you gave me, I need to understand it a lot better first. But the point is that light appears to do both at the same time. It appears to be both particle and wave as it travels through space. Until it arrives at a point where it's detected, and then it's resolved to a specific place. All right, I'm botching that explanation. I'm going to scrap that whole quantum physics thing. I had it better in my head beforehand. It's not going well. The point is, that's okay. That's true of a sword as well. The point is that effectively our actions are not sealed until the very end. An action is neither good nor bad until you reach the very end. A person who commits an avera, who commits a sin, right now, that was a bad act. However, if the person then does tshuva, if the grief of that avera leads that person to return, then he's now converted that entire path of action into something good, into something positive. It's now become a zichus. This is part of a basic Kabbalistic idea that everything in the universe has a purpose. Everything has a purpose. There's no such thing as something that is truly bad. We simply lack the perspective. Take a look in the second side, please. It's source number 10. One's horizon broadens via tshuva. And as a result of the greatness and length and breadth, height and depth of this penetrating view, the horizon that's been broadened, divine goodness and benevolence are revealed in their truth. Once I've done tshuva, once I've returned to that higher state, I can comprehend the goodness in everything. The flaws seen in the order of life are recognized as creases which become straightened. It's a perspective that we gain once we have done tshuva. Now, I hasten to note, that does not mean that averos are a good thing. It will be far better for us not to make the mistake in the first place. But it does mean that an avera is not the end of the line. It can in fact be something that's going to drive me in a positive direction. And Rav Kook applies this in three specific ways. Number one, that an avera awakens me to tshuva. Going back to the point from source number 9, going back to the grief that one feels from an avera, on a very simple level, it awakens me to tshuva. And therefore, that shows me that it came from a good source. That's number 1. Number 2, if you take a look at source number 11, Rav Kook talks about anxiety that is developed when one knows he's on a wrong path, when he knows he's doing something wrong. He says, every sin introduces into the spirit unique anxiety, which departs only via tshuva. The anxiety is converted to faith and courage in proportion to the depth of the tshuva. One can recognize the imprint of that anxiety in the lines of a person's face, his movements, his voice, his conduct, his penmanship. How do you like that? It's a good thing we type. His mode of speech, and especially his writing, his presentation, and structuring of ideas. Rav Kook says if you're truly sensitive, you can actually see the anxiety, that you can perceive the anxiety that a person is experiencing because he knows on some level that he's doing something inappropriate. Wherever sin obstructs the light, there the flaw is visible. And according to the level of sin and its relevance to the subject at hand, so its impression is visible to those who gaze with lucid vision. He says, there's a real, palpable feeling of wrongness that a person actually has. The same way like when you're starting to get a cold, you get irritable. That's what Rav Kook is describing. The feeling of anxiety. And Rav Kook suggests that when a person then turns that around, when a person does tshuva, that anxiety becomes instead a positive feeling of, oh, things are better now. A person feels more at home with himself. A person feels more comfortable. And so that's a second way in which the avera, the zadon that's been committed, can become a zchus. And then a third way. This is very important. I flash back to Friday night scenes from my family table when I was growing up. And you know, it would be 7:30, 8 o'clock in the evening, and all of us kids are yawning and fighting with each other and fidgeting and can't wait to get away from the table. I don't know if that sounds familiar to anybody here. And my father turning to me and saying, you know, if this was a weeknight, you'd be wide awake and asking to go do this or go do that or whatever it is. You'd be playing. Why are you so tired now? I still hear his voice on Friday nights. But the truth of the matter is that sometimes the motivation we muster for things that are inappropriate is a lot stronger than the motivation we muster for things that we know we should be doing. That's reality. There's a certain alertness, there's even a certain passion that comes with doing something that's inappropriate. And Rav Kook suggests that when a person does a proper tshuva, they take that passion that drove them towards the avera, and they can turn that into a passion for mitzvah. If you take a look, please, at source number 12. Tshuva converts the desire, which has already been actualized in the sinful deed, which has already acquired the strength of the actual. He's actualized it, he acted on it, to the point that it broke the strength of ethics and faith. Once the divine light shines well, and the will has been uprooted from sin, it, meaning that passion, does not return to the void. Rather, it acts with its strength upon the foundation of the universe, to impress upon it a mighty will for light and good, and so intentional sin becomes actual merit. What Rav Kook is saying in plain English is that a person who has been motivated with strong energy to do something wrong will be able to convert that same energy to be directed towards the good. You ever hear about the disco rabbi in Israel, Rav Grossman? A couple of heads. Rav Grossman is in, I don't know if he's still in Migdal HaEmek. I know he wasn't, but he's still in Migdal HaEmek. He got his start originally by taking an old shul that no one was using anymore and setting up classes for kids in this old abandoned shul. And one day there were some visitors coming through, and they watched what was going on, and suddenly a rock came crashing through the window. And Grossman smiled. And they said to him, you know, a rock just came through your window. Where did it come from? What's going on? He said, oh yeah, there are kids who play outside and they throw rocks at the window. And he's still, you know, smiling away. The visitor is still perplexed and says, well, what are you smiling about? He says, it's not the ones that are throwing the rocks I'm worried about. It's the ones who aren't throwing the rocks that I'm worried about. The ones who don't care. The one who cares enough that he's bothered about the fact that he's not inside learning, that he's going to be moved to throw the rock, he has the energy and the passion. And on the day when he walks in the door, he's going to be able to turn that to the good. It's the one who's apathetic that makes me worry a lot more. That's the power that can be turned around. So those are three ways in which the Avera becomes a mitzvah. Number one, in the sense that it motivates tshuva. Number two, in the sense that once I've committed the Avera, I now feel anxious, and once I return, that is converted to a calming feeling, which can in the end be encouraging for me. And number three, the passion that I invested in the Avera can now be channeled in a positive direction. It all fits with Rav Kook's basic concept that the goodness was there all along and I just needed something to motivate me to find it, to uncover it. Now, up until now, what we've said over the last 30, 35 minutes has basically been nice theory. But where does it go in practice? Does this mean anything for what I'm going to do? Or at the end of the day, do I still have to think through what I did over the past year and, you know, go ask for mechila and say my vidui, etc.? So, no, there's no getting out of vidui, and there's no getting out of the nuts and bolts of tshuva. But this does have practical applications for the way that I pursue the tshuva. First, source number 13, a Gemara involving a man named Rabbi Elazar ben Durdaya. I'm not going through his entire story right now. But a certain woman says to Rabbi Elazar ben Durdaya, you can never do tshuva. It is impossible for you to ever do tshuva. It can't be. That statement to Rabbi Elazar ben Durdaya, who was a man who had been involved in all manner of self-indulgence, that statement itself acts as his goad for improvement. It's a remarkable story. He's somebody who has gone off completely in self-indulgence. And somebody's saying to him, too late, you can never be accepted back, was what moved him to return. He used his frustration as a goad for improvement. Knowing, as Rav Kook says, that perfection is there for us. It's underlying our personalities. It's there, and we just have to go for it. We can use our frustration as well. When we, like Rabbi Elazar ben Durdaya, face an Avera that says to us, forget it, it's all over, there's no way, we can use that very frustration as incentive and say, yes, there is a way. Because I know it's there. It's there underneath. I just have to look for it. That's number one. Number two, to learn to be sensitive to my anxiety and use it as a goad to ask what's bothering me. If you take a look at source 14, it's a remarkable story. The Gemara in Gittin is part of a section that discusses the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash and the fall in general of the land of Israel to the Romans. And they tell a story about a city called Kfar Sachania. Kfar Sachania apparently was a city of righteous people. And look at the story. At one point, the going rate in the market was that you could get 40 measures of grain for a dinar, for a coin. Nechsar hashar modia achas. The rate dropped one measure. Meaning, instead of being able to get 40 measures for my dollar, now I can only get 39 measures for my dollar. What causes that to happen? Hello. What causes that to happen? laws of supply and demand, folks. This ain't quantum physics. It's a good thing. It means I can explain it. It was 40 measures for a dollar, right? Now it's 39. That means the price has gone up. Either because grain is more scarce, right? Or because there's an inflation issue. We'll go with grain becoming more scarce. So, when grain becomes more scarce, what do? You say, oh, well, it must be the weather. Or it must be the worms ate away the supply. Or it must be the farmers had trouble getting it to market. We come up with all sorts of explanations. That's not what they did in Kfar Sakhanya when grain went up in price. What did they do? Ubadku, they investigated. Umatsu, and they found, lo and behold, someone had committed a horrible crime. Abu b'no shabo al nara ma'ora sabiyama kipurim, a father and a son had lived with a betrothed woman on Yom Kippur. Ve'avim lebezdin uskalum, they brought them to basin, they punished them, v'chazar ashar limikomo. And lo and behold, everything went back to normal. Now, it's an odd story on several levels. It's odd because you're describing this town as a town of fully righteous people, and they're so great. And then this is the Avera, like, that doesn't quite match. Leave that question aside. It's a good question. The key to the story, though, and the point in bringing it, is that the city is praised for its sensitivity. When something went wrong, when they didn't have the supply of food that they had always had, they didn't look to say, well, it must be the rain, or it must be the roads, or whatever. They said, have we done anything wrong? So, too, for a person, knowing that there's perfection underneath and that it gets disturbed if I've done something wrong, it's up to me to be sensitive to my anxiety and to say, why do I feel unsettled? Is it really because the food I had for dinner last night didn't agree with me? Is it really because I'm nervous about some trip I'm taking or a test I'm going to have or something with my kids? Or do I feel unsettled because I know there's something I haven't yet taken care of? There's something that I've done that has me feeling out of sync. When a person can't sleep at night, it's worthwhile for the person to ask, why can't I sleep? And it may not be because I had a second can of Coke. It may be because there's something inside that's really troubled, that feels like there is something out of place. And it's trying to motivate me to do tshuva. That's a second application of Rav Kook's point. And then a third, to take the passion I had when I pursued the chait and channel it for the good. If you take a look at source 15, classic Gemara and Yoma, where the sages davened first to get rid of the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, for idolatry, and they succeeded. And then Bo Rachme, source 15, they davened Ve'imser Biyadayu. Not only that, the Yetzer Hara for immorality was given to them also. Omar Lehu, but when it was handed to them, they were told, Chazu Di'ikalisu Leilahahu Kalia Alma, know that if you were to kill this Yetzer Hara, if you were to eliminate the desire for adultery, for immorality, you would end up eradicating the world. Chavshu, so they didn't destroy it, they just caged it. For Tlasa Yomi, for 3 days. Ubo Beyasa Bas Yomi Bukhalerit Yisrael Velo Ishtachach. But at the end of 3 days, they went looking for eggs and found that they couldn't find any. The idea being that there is no specific Yetzer Hara for immorality. There's a general desire for relations, and that's what produces the immorality, but it's also, frankly, what produces the fresh eggs. You can't separate the two. And the point is that we look for the good within the chait, like Rav Kook said before. We take the passion that we had for the chait and instead channel it for the good. And those are the three practical points. So again, brief summary of where we've gone with this. We started out with the idea that tshuva is not just about correcting a specific sin. It's about an overhaul of myself, revealing the perfection that was there at the outset. The avera spurs me to make that return by giving me a feeling of grief, by giving me a feeling of pain, a feeling of there's something wrong. And Rav Kook says, that's the way by giving me that goad, that's the way that the Avera can actually become a zechus, can become a merit when I do tshuva. It awakens me to tshuva, number one. Number two, it generates anxiety, which in the end will result in a positive feeling once I've done tshuva. And number three, this Avera brought with it a certain passion, which I can turn for the good. And the practical applications are that I can use my frustration with the Avera as a goad for improvement. I can be sensitive to the anxiety that I feel and ask, what is it that's bothering me? And I can take that passion I brought to the Avera and channel it instead for the mitzvah. It's important to remember that because we're talking about a perfection that's already inside, even a person's thoughts along these lines are very significant. Take a look, please, at source 16, a remarkable line. The Gemara says, a man walks up to a woman and asks her to marry him, on condition that he is a tzaddik. I want to ask how many women here, their husband said that to them, and what you found out afterwards. But the man says he wants you to marry him on condition that he's a tzaddik. Even if he is fully wicked, it works, assuming she accepts. Assuming that she says yes, even if he was a Rasha Gomor, he was completely wicked, doesn't matter. The marriage works. Why? Shemahir her tshuva bedaito, because perhaps he had thoughts of tshuva in his mind. Even the thought is enough to render him a tzaddik. That in and of itself is sufficient. So this is a little bit of a longer talk that I actually gave last night. But just to show you one source explaining that. If you take a look, please, at source number 17. Rav Kook says, even if a person is disposed to stumble, to flaw his righteousness and ethical conduct, this does not flaw his perfection. The perfection is still there. The essence of his perfection is in his longing and desire to achieve perfection. Part of a greater theme, but to condense it into a soundbite. Correcting the past is not really the essence of tshuva. That's not really what it is. Tshuva, my return, is really about changing the future. In other words, I don't mean to say that having done something wrong, I don't need to make up for it. I do need to right the wrongs of the past. But that's not really what tshuva is. If Rav Kook is telling me that tshuva is about revealing the perfection underneath, I do that going forward. I do that from this day onward by determining that I'm not going to sin again. That's my tshuva. When we say in the davening on Yom Kippur, Yi Ratzon Shelo Echta Od, may it be your will Hashem, that I never sin again, that's really what tshuva is. Because then I've revealed the perfection that's underneath. Sure, I still have to go back and clean up my act. But the key really is for the future. And so even the thought of tshuva, for a person to say, from here on out, I'm going to act in accordance with the perfection that's underneath, even that already is tshuva, and already propels me on that path that he described at the very beginning, that we saw in source number one, when he said, upon it, all personal and communal hopes are founded. They're all founded on that idea that I can decide at this very moment that from here on out, my path is a path of growth, my path is a path of tshuva, and ultimately my path is a path of revealing that perfection that's underneath. And so get a ksiva v'chasima tova. I just talked for like 45 minutes without questions. It can't be that that was all clear. Even leaving out the quantum physics part. Questions? Yes, please. That's a really good question. What Rav Kook has done for us here is given us an outline, but what do you do in practice? So, One point that he continually makes is the importance of Talmud Torah. He says, you can't do tshuva unless you learn Torah, because you need to know what there is. Your neshama may be aware that something is wrong, but your mind ain't going to know until you've actually done the reading, until you actually know what there is, potentially to correct. So that's one. Number two, as you said, the cheshbon ha-nefesh is critical, but I think overall, it's really a matter of trying. In other words, in likelihood for most people, not anybody sitting here, but in general for most people, there's probably more than one thing they need to work on. As a general rule for human beings. So that it could be that they'll fix something and they'll feel better about it, and then there will still be something else left that they still need to work on. But to a certain extent, it's a matter of trial and error. So you ask yourself, what about in the realm of my davening? What about in the way I talk to people? What about in the way I relate to my kids? And so on and so on. Looking for it, trying it out. But what Rav Kook suggests is that with each element that I repair, I will already start to feel something improved. I'll start to feel something better, and that will guide me in terms of whether I'm on the right path. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Ksiva v'chasima tova.